Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. If you like us, you support us, make sure to go check out our buddy over at Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish to check out some real, authentic Vedic astrology. It's really, really great stuff. Everybody saw Mr. Neil John on our episode a few months ago. We've had two interviews with him. He's incredible. His work is incredible. So if you want to go get a reading, some authentic ancient Vedic astrology, I highly, highly suggest it. Go check him out, Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish. If you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. Tell him Big Dave sent you. But if you want to support the Bog, you like the Bog, you go to Patreon.com/TheBog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. You get a sticker, you get a mug, all that kind of stuff. And most importantly, you get RSS feed so you can get audio of every single show that we do in your car, on your commutes, at work, or at the gym. That is patreon.com/TheBog. Go over there and sign up. Help us keep the lights on, keep the Bog growing. If you want to support the Bog another way, make sure to go to shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop. And you can buy some sweet merch, man. Summer is here. It's white boy summer, right? Make sure to go get yourself a muscle shirt, get yourself an artisan chef apron, so when you're manning the grill, you can flex some sweet Bog merch. And also, we got all kinds of stuff over there. Hats, t-shirts, dresses, onesies, hoodies. Everything over there. So make sure to go over check out shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop if you want to support the Bog another way. We have a really, really cool episode. Remember I told you guys we're going to start doing Mondays too. We're going to start doing Mondays, Fridays, 6 p.m. Eastern, every single Monday and Friday. The Mondays and the Fridays, we're splitting up. On Fridays, we're going to do regular Bog, how we always do it, history, theology, philosophy, all that kind of stuff mixed in with some other kind of type of content, game stuff. But on Mondays, we are going to talk about more practical things. We're going to talk about family life and raising children and all kinds of different things. And with us, we have a new co-host that she's going to be joining us. She is she's a mother of, Miss Swan, how many kids you got? Three?
I have four kids.
Four kids. So we have Miss Swan joining us on Mondays, and then we got Mr. Andre doing two shows, the hardest working man in show business. What's up, Mr. Andre?
I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent. So, Miss Swan, you are a second generation heathen. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. So my parents basically decided to follow that path when they were younger, and so I was born into that.
That's really fascinating because obviously the overwhelming majority of us, at least in the United States, are first generation. Now, there's obviously a lot of us that are quite a few years in. Me, for one, I'm coming up on, I don't know, 12 years or something. I've been a heathen. A lot of people, I've gotten to the point that most of my life I've been a heathen. And there's a lot of folks out there, like, you know, especially older guys in the community, 30, 40 years that they've been in the faith longer I've been alive. So we do have some wisdom and stuff, but you coming from a second generation, you know, heathen background is really, really fascinating, and it's really cool and inspiring to see. So I wanted to kind of start out asking you a couple questions about what it was like growing up heathen yourself. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Yeah, for sure.
So you grew up in Europe, right?
Yes, that's right. In Germany.
You're you know, you are a German, and you grew up, and I'm guessing most of Germany this time was either, were they, when you were growing up, were they mostly religious, or were they fairly kind of unreligious like they are now?
Well, that is really depending on the area. So I would say that further south, you'd have more religious people and also more Catholicism. Mm-hmm. And then as you go north, people will gradually be more Protestant and also more a-religious, really, more atheistic. But in the area where I grew up, sort of in the middle, it's almost a 50-50 split between Catholic and Protestant. Mm-hmm. And, well, I would say the level of religiosity, whatever you want to call it, was sort of, yeah, it wasn't, they weren't very serious about it. Not like in Bavaria, where they are 100% Catholics, basically. But it was sort of secular, but also the sort of social standards were that you would get confirmed at a certain age, so sort of a coming of age ceremony if you were Protestant, and getting your first communion about 8 years old or so when you were Catholic. So all these things were very much observed by most people, by most families, and most people were baptized either Catholic or Protestant.
That's interesting. And did you have, were there any other heathen kids around in your area, or were you kind of the only one?
No, I was definitely the only one in the immediate area. There were, when we met for bloth or other sort of getting together things, there were some other children, but not very many. And they were not from the immediate area either.
So it was sort of similar to kind of what we have going on now in the States with kindreds that are a little bit further away, not so much in immediate localities, and they travel a little bit and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we definitely always had to drive somewhere or had people come to our place.
So what was your experience going to school as a heathen youth in a society that's mostly either secular or Christian?
Well, I was the only one for a little while who was exempt from the religion class, which we had then. There was no ethics or philosophy class like you will maybe see now in some schools. There, you were only able to choose between Catholic and Protestant class. So this was sort of like a school subject. In the first four grades or so, I was the only one who was exempt from it. So I just had a break while the others were studying Bible stuff, I suppose. And then there was a family moving from Pakistan, and they were Hindus. And the girl went to my class, and so we were the only two who were exempt.
That's interesting. Now, Mr. Andre, you grew up, obviously you're from Norway. This is pretty interesting. A German and a Norwegian and American. This is like diversity is our strength on the show. Yeah. So, Mr. Andre, you grew up, but in Scandinavia, it's a little bit different because you guys are very much immersed in a culture that was very much aware of a heathen past. Would you say, Andre, you're first generation though, right?
Yeah, I'm a first generation.
Are your parents Christian, or are they just kind of irreligious?
They were Christian, but you know, skewing somewhat towards irreligious. They were more like cafeteria Christian, kind of like we go to church on Sundays when it's available.
Wait, what'd you call it? Cafeteria Christian?
Yeah, cafeteria Christians, like those who are just, you know, casually mentioned that they're Christian in the cafeteria, that kind.
I never heard that before.
But, me neither. I love it.
That's great. So, Mr. Andre, you are, you know, all of us here, well, anyway, all of us here are growing up or raising our kids to be grown up in heathen households. And this is actually something that I get asked about a lot. How do I explain this to my kids? How do I help them navigate a society that it might not understand them? How do we homeschool? How do we do this? You know, there's no handbooks on how to raise heathen kids, unfortunately. Maybe somebody should write one, but we don't have anything like that. So we just kind of have to wing it. So we're going to talk about how we, the techniques, and maybe something that parents can know. Maybe especially, I get this question mostly from new parents, people that are either expecting or they're recently married and they're trying to conceive, and they're the ones that want to know most how to raise heathen children and different maybe tricks or techniques or things just to keep in mind of. Miss Swan, you have four children. What have you kind of, if you had to say something to those young people that are maybe getting ready to start a family, how they can best raise a heathen family?
Well, that is a question I also get quite a bit. And it's sometimes not that easy for me to answer simply because I'm not, moving away from a family tradition, you know what I mean? Because oftentimes people have the issue or they're concerned that the grandparents, so their own parents or their partner's parents who may be Christian or have very different ideas, how to mitigate their influence on their children and how to sort of navigate that, right? And I don't have that situation. So that is some of the issue that some people have that I don't have. But other than that, It's really kind of, well, it comes naturally to me, of course. But I think the biggest issue that we would need to tackle as parents is that we have a firm stance, that we define this as our family culture and our family religion, and we don't sort of make this like an optional thing. You know what I mean? Like how some people say, oh, I don't want to force my child into a religion. They're supposed to choose on their own one day and all that sort of stuff. No. And I think it's really important to not do that and to be very clear and to hand your children that sort of identity, because that gives them firmness in their life and it gives them stability, right? So in that way, a lot of this can actually be child-led, because they will have questions, and as they grow, there will be concepts that they will want to learn about. You know, they'll ask you things, and it started with me that way. I think it was witnessing a thunderstorm. That is one of those big things where you can introduce Dona, as he's called in Germany, or Thor, and talk to the children about it and tell them a story about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So those are always things that you can sort of little inroads where you can sort of feel out how interested your children are in certain things and what they want to know.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's I would have said the same exact thing, especially the point where you said don't leave it up to choice. You know, what other religion on the planet says, oh, well, I'm just going to leave it up for my kids to decide. You know, that is pretty much rotted out religiosity, period. My kids understand that my kids are very young. My oldest is 6, my next one is 3, and then my youngest is a baby. So they're not kind of at that stage of, what's the word for it? They don't have that level of self-awareness to question it yet or not.
Yeah.
So they just kind of understand that this is what mommy and daddy do. This is what uncle so-and-so and uncle so-and-so and aunt so-and-so, which is what they call my kinsmen. When you come into my kindred, you be part of your oath is you accept all of the kindred children as your godchildren, effectively.
Yeah.
And they call all of them aunt and uncle. That's what they become. So they said they just understand that's what mommy and daddy and all the aunts and uncles do. So they don't really understand that there's anything else. So they are being raised to understand that this is the default worldview, that the fam, this is what we believe, this is who we are. So when they get older, my kids don't even know who Jesus is. They just think Jesus Christ is a swear word. Like they just, and I've had to correct them before because, you know, their dad's got a potty mouth and they hear it from me. And then, you know, once around my son, I'll be, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, dude, don't say that. Sorry, Dad, that's a bad word, right? Yeah, that's a bad word. Don't say that.
A bad, bad word.
Yeah. They don't understand that there's anything behind it. They just think that it's a curse word. So my kids are going to grow up like that. They're going to understand that default worldview is heathenry. And all of this other stuff is going to be new to them when they experience it. And that's going to be the way that it is. And I'm not going to be one of these, you know, family patriarchs that deals with a whole bunch of funny business. The bottom line is, you know, Ian, you are going to raise your children in the tradition. Speaking of my children, when my children are going to raise their children in the tradition, or they are not going to benefit from the family. That's the way that it is. And I've actually kicked around the idea of if they do something really ridiculous, say they convert to Islam or something crazy like that, that I may have to shun my own kids. That's something that I've had to think about. And that's it sucks thinking that you might have to do that, but, you know, how far does it go?
Right.
So, that's pretty much it. It's to create this as the default worldview for your children, because it is the default worldview. It was the default worldview for thousands of years for our ancestors. This stuff that the people believe now is new. Mr. Andre, if you were proposed that same question to talk to a new family that are conceiving, or perhaps they're about to have a baby, and they want to learn how to raise a heathen household, what would you suggest?
I would suggest first and foremost for them to look at their own practices and manage their expectations to some degree. in that sense, I mean, that they need to look at the fact that they might not have a established practice, maybe not 100%. They might be lacking a few things, certain rituals. Maybe they lack a professional kindred or something like that, and they might want to look into getting that first, because you can't expect a children, like one of your children or all of them or a kindred, to accept a religion at face value or accept it completely if there isn't a degree of consistency around it. So first and foremost, you need to be consistent. Secondly, when I said manage your expectations, is that you can't just go all ham immediately. If you have a one-year-old, you don't deal with this. The one-year-old just participates in things that you do. You don't need to necessarily try and explain the finer metaphysical elements of the faith to a three-year-old either. Yeah. You need to start a very young, of course, but you also need to manage your expectations and also kind of like make it appropriate for the age. For instance, a personal experience that I've had here for my oldest child, which is three, when she was a bit frightened at night, she was comforted by knowing that the necklace that she wore of Thor's hammer belonged to Thor, and Thor beats up monsters.
Yeah.
Which was enough for her.
Yep.
That was more than enough. And that is like, that's how you start. That's how you lay the groundwork for understanding who Thor is as a god. And for a three-year-old, that is more than enough to know Thor is the good guy that beats up bad monsters.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what my kids, that's the level where my kids are at too. They understand that Thor beats up monsters. They're starting to understand Mother Frigg. Obviously little boys, at first they just love Thor. That's like, you know, the thunder.
Little girls too, by the way.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Thor's a favorite.
It was like my absolute favorite childhood deity because I always felt, you know, protected. You know, you feel very vulnerable as a child. You're surrounded by very large things and people. And it's very comforting to know that there's somebody and some force looking out for you. And, you know.
It takes the fright out of something like a thunderstorm if you know that a thunderstorm is the sound of Thor battling a bunch of monsters. Because suddenly now the thunderstorm is on your side.
Yes, absolutely, exactly. And I mean, that's what I meant by being child-led to a degree, right? That what you said, you basically respond to your children's needs with your natural mindset that is pagan. And this is also something that I had on my mind, is that a lot of people who were not raised in this worldview or mindset, they sort of default to the scientism that they learned in school, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of saying something like, look, Thor is going to protect you, or how it was in my case, actually, when I was a little child and I was afraid, my parents told me that my Fylgia is always there. And she's always looking down on me when I sleep in my bed, and she's never going to sleep. And that was really comforting to me too. But, you know, so you, instead of saying something like that, you say things like, oh, you know, check under your bed. There are no monsters. They don't exist. And, you know, that sort of thing. A lot of people tend to sort of default to that. And I think this is where, as parents who want to raise their children pagan, you need to check yourself a little bit in that and sort of like, you know, analyze what your defaults would be.
That's a great point. Or even that would probably also apply to people that were formerly Christian as well.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah. That's and also I would say getting your children involved. One of the best teaching elements that I'll tell you guys, for people out there that are boy dads and boy moms that got little boys. Boys are not really, they don't really care about the, I mean, you could sit down and you could tell them stories, but they got to be really short. They don't really, they don't want to hear the big long stories. They just, you know, they're, especially my sons are absolute animals. They just, they jump around. They got, you know, high motors. They're just savages. So they like to just play. They're, well, it's gross motor stuff. And they want to do the gross motor stuff. They're not like little girls. They're different. So, one of the things that has been probably the strongest teaching tool for not just like my sons, because little girls are more patient, they're better at receiving information. I'm pretty jealous because my one kinsman, he's got a little girl. She's about four. She's in between my sons, and she like recites whole stories. She recites whole stories from the Eddas. My sons, it's like getting them to sit down is like ridiculous. But that's kind of how it is. However, my sons really, really love getting involved with the sumble. They love the bloat. All of the kids of my kindred love it. They every time we get together, they think they're like, are we gonna raise the horn? Are we gonna hail the gods? That's like their favorite thing. When we're
yeah, they all go hail.
Yeah,
hail.
They love it. They love it. Yeah, yeah. It's like the peanut gallery behind it. Somebody says their bit, and he says hail. All the kids are like, hail,
yep.
Hail.
Yeah,
it's so much fun.
It's the same with my kids. That's very true. Yeah, they love that because they know they have their cues and they have their place, right? They feel important in this. Like they feel like they have an impact. And that's really important too. But I mean, also, modeling is so important, right? So if you have an altar, if you give libation and things like that, it's good if your family members, your children see that. And if they, you know, if they see how you are reverent or you are respectful with those, for example, with the items on your altar. So, those are all ways in which where it's just like any other parenting thing. You just want to model the behavior that you want to see in your children.
Yeah. And in general, do you want to expose them to all these, the different like blokes, the symbol, the altars and everything. So that they grow up thinking that this is the norm. This is
yes.
normal.
And it's
this
important
is how
to
it's supposed
them.
To be.
Include
yes.
them in big ritual too. I mean, this is actually one of those things that I see a lot is that people sort of make their practice when they figure out how to practice. They make it a very personal, private thing and very adult-centered. And they don't really include their kids. And that's sort of going back to what I said earlier with this this modernist mindset of allowing your children to choose their religion. You know, you don't allow them to choose what language they want to speak. You don't allow them to choose what nationality or ethnicity they are going to be, you know? So this is just part of your normal family culture, how you practice. And it's part, they have to take part in that, just like they take part in your daily meals or in bedtime.
Yeah. And you, you mentioned that they don't get to choose their ethnicity. And there's something that I kind of have trouble explaining to people say that I come off zealous sometimes, and I do come off zealous sometimes, but to me, somebody that believes that this is my ethnicity, I don't get to choose my faith. The faith is attached to my ethnicity. The Poetic Edda is the story of our people. Like we don't have a choice in that. So it's like, you know, obviously, why if I believe that, and I do, and I know that because it's true, why would I just be like, okay, kids, you can just go out and experiment and be Buddhists or, you know, Hare Krishna or Taoist or Shinto, or just go explore the playground of religion at the theology supermarket. Why would
I do this? Well, it does your children a disservice anyway, because you want to set boundaries for your children, right? I mean, you want them to feel safe and secure within the family and have things that they expect that happen, that they can sort of predict a little bit and make things more comfortable for them. They know what's going to happen. They know how, you know, what's expected of them. And that gives them something to hold on to, basically. And religion is a very important part of that. And also, I remember, actually, now that you were just saying this with including kids and whatever, there was this one, and I don't know how old I was, but there was this one big bloat where there was a horse sacrifice and everybody ate horse meat, and I was really unsure about it, and I was really kind of nervous about it. I must have been, I don't know, maybe six or seven or so, and I remember tasting this horse meat, and it was just this strange religious moment. You know, it was just like, oh my gosh, I just did this, you know, and everyone else ate it too. And it's like, oh, I just remember this so vividly, even though it was just this little portion of that bloat. I don't remember the rest of it, to be honest. But those things, they stick in children's minds their entire lives, and they become so valuable, you know. So it's so important to include your kids in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely. The ritual is so important. And Ms. Swan said about how a lot of modern people have this tendency to say, oh, well, this is my personal little secret-y thing that I do for myself over here. And our ancestors weren't like that. It was they were exoteric first. They were community first. So it's not really authentic to want to keep it this private secret little thing off to the side. It was something that the community did. It was something that the whole family did. It was something that your children were involved with. They, you know, and it's here's the thing with kids. Obviously, kids are hands-on learners. They're going to remember an experience before they remember something that you say to them or something that you teach them. So when, like Ms. Swan said, eating the horse meat at the bloat, that was something really special for her. So make sure you involve the children and find ways. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it is hard because once in a while you have a bloat and you have a baby that starts having a meltdown or a kid that has a temper tantrum, or it happens sometimes. But you just have to realize that that's part of it. That's part of what you do. Without raising the next heathen generation, it dies. You know what I mean? We die.
And I mean, the Christians have the same situations in their churches. They also have a baby that starts crying in the middle of a sermon, whatever.
Yeah.
And they'll just deal with it. You know, it doesn't mean that they're never going to bring their baby to church again. It's just a natural part of their religiosity. It's a natural part. So you don't think about it. It becomes, and also on that note, you're not only a heathen or a pagan in the moment where you perform ritual or give libation or whatever.
Yeah.
You are this every moment of your life. And that is something that needs to be apparent to your children. So when you talk about things, you know, if you look at other religions, they constantly refer to their gods or God, their holy scripture, their concepts, you know, their way that the world was made and all those things. And you just make that a casual occurrence in your daily speech to your children, and it becomes natural.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. Mr. Andre, do you have anything to add to that?
Honestly, not really. I think what has been said here, but it's one thing I want to add when it comes to the inclusion of children and so forth. And this is something I've seen in certain churches, for instance, in Norway, where it was considered fine, and this is not unique to Norway, it was considered fine to bring children to church because the priest oftentimes just accepted that kids are kids and let the kids just go maniac all over the church. That's what they were supposed to do. So that was fine. But they still, you know, participated in, you know, reading and singing and so forth, and then they just went berserk again, which was fine again, because there was this acceptance that kids are like that, but they're still part of something.
You just can't get the Viking out of the Norwegian Christian kids.
Yeah.
No, just let them go berserk in the church. It'll pass soon.
Oh man, well, my mom's family is Roman Catholic, and let me tell you, when they did Catholic stuff, the kids were still chimping out. It's like it doesn't change.
But kids, that's what I mean. Around. That's what I mean, though. When it comes to pagan communities holding rituals and such, there should be and has to be an understanding, not only from the parents, but the wider society, that this is okay. Children are supposed to be and should be encouraged to participate in these groups, which means that other group members must also be accepting of their presence. A lot of people seem very hesitant to want to include children and bring them to certain places. This is not just exclusive to religion.
No, it's very common in society.
But it's like a dirty thing to bring a kid to a normal place where, you know, normal humans go, because, you know, it might cry. And all the people are going to get mad because a child cries, which is frankly, so disconnected from the nature of reality. And I think that's really important to emphasize that, yes, there might be a ritual where there might be a several babies crying. Shut your mouth. Let it happen.
Yeah, that's but how that it's is supposed a general, to be. A general problem, like you said. It's not just in churches or whatever. It's if you enter a cafe with children in tow, you're going to get, you know, sour looks that, oh, they might be loud.
Yes, because they might end up crying and that might inconvenience somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Without people realizing that, you know, children are the next generation. They are above you in the totem pole here.
Mm-hmm.
Would you guys say that this is just inherent, like, modernist antinatalism?
Yes.
Absolutely.
No question about it. Yes.
Because I feel that way, too. It's like, even my friends that have kids, they feel like they're like, even like places that I'm going, that I'm bringing my kids, I'm like, hey, come out. And they'll be like, oh, well, I can't. I got the kids. Bring them, dude. My kids are going to be there. Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just like they just presuppose that children are not allowed.
Yeah. Well, it's and not I've heard so bad many- here as it is in Germany, though. I don't know how it is in Norway, Andre, but in Germany, it's much worse than here in North America.
Really?
In certain places in Norway, for instance, where I currently live, you know, kids are just kind of accepted and kind of cherished. There has been times where I've lost track of my daughter and she's just gone entering inside other people's houses. Like, that was fine. Mm-hmm. In larger cities in Norway, however, you see this trend where, for instance, if somebody wants to be parents, they have to make a choice. Either you become
friends
a parent
or kids.
And lose your friends or keep your friends. If you have friends, people will just stop. If you have kids, your friends will stop contacting you because they'll just assume that this child of yours is now taking all of your time and we don't want to deal with that. So bye. Go hang out with all the parents. Simultaneously, people always have this mentality. I was like, okay, why would you want to ever have kids? They are, first and foremost, they take all of your time and they take all of your money. And thirdly, they don't provide tax income and are thus essentially social parasites.
Ugh.
That is a mentality I love.
That's awful.
I like it. Made me feel That's sick awful. To my stomach.
Yeah, actually, I have a friend in Norway who also said that this is even the way that stay-at-home moms are viewed as social parasites.
Yes. They are viewed as parasites because they don't contribute to the workforce.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That's ridiculous.
Well, I remember a few years ago, I was pregnant with my second child and I had a two-year-old child. And I went home to Germany to visit. And my good friend, who's Canadian, was living in Germany at the time. So we decided to meet up and hang out for a number of days. And he will probably also forever remember this, the way that people looked at us, really disgusted as he was carrying my daughter on his shoulders. I mean, people naturally assumed that we must be a couple, right? Which that's fine. I was pregnant, very round. And so people would look at us almost like, are they really having another one of those? You know, in this really sort of negative way. And when we entered a cafe with a stroller, it was already, you know, people would already look at us and they all but groaned. You know what I mean? Like they were just so negative about the presence of a child and people daring to make even more of them that, it was definitely much more negative than I've experienced it to be here.
Andre, is it like that in Norway?
Not to that degree, no. It's not that people would get angry if you have kids. It's more that they will look at you a bit like weirdly if you bring your kids to any like public places that are more intended for adults, restaurant, cafe, so forth. Or they will view with great annoyance if you make special requests on behalf of kids. I've had hotel clerks look at me like I was from the moon because I asked for a baby bed in the hotel room, which now they had to put in there, which was extra work on their part. So, like, I inconvenienced them with having children.
So and what's it? Sorry.
No, go on.
What's your experience in Norway with larger families, though. Like, as soon as you already have three or four kids and your wife is pregnant again, are people going to say something?
They're most likely going to end up saying something along the lines of, don't you think it's time to stop now? Like,
really?
Yeah, it's like having one to two kids, that's fine. That's considered like somewhat normal.
Yeah.
Having more than that, you start looking like, okay, are you going a bit overboard now? You do realize you have to raise them, right?
I have that. Like, they're trying to test. I got that with four kids. It was already like, wow, you have a huge family. I'm like, no, I have four kids. That's not a huge family. That's normal.
Yep. In Western Europe, like Norway, Germany, and so forth, that would be considered a huge family. Having five kids, you're basically an alien.
Yeah, it's true.
Really? That's. I mean, there's some of that here in the States. I found that people are much more like accepting of, like, I've never, like, I say that I have three kids, and most of the time it's like, hey, you're the man. like it's never really negative about having multiple kids. It's usually pretty positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Maybe the States are just kind of like, we're like behind the degeneration.
To be fair, it's like in places like Norway, we have very small societies and so forth. Like, you know, larger families, like having multiple kids will be more noticeable. But while you're in the United States, you have also simultaneously been exposed to, like, okay, yeah, this is one couple. They're living in New York. They have one kid. Oh, wow. Congratulations on making it in that hellhole of a city. And then you have, like, someone knows someone who knows an Amish guy who just happened to have 13 kids and are awaiting another one.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
just, you know, the Amish or the Mormons, you know, they have 13, 14 kids, no problem with that. 20, I've heard of one having 20 kids. That's normal.
Yeah, they have, man. I was, I went squirrel hunting with my buddy, one of my kinsmen. We went squirrel hunting a few months ago, and we were at this spot, and we were, you know, hanging out, and, you know, we just got done, you know, looking for squirrels and whatnot, and these Mennonites rolled up. And for folks that aren't familiar, Mennonite is like Amish. They're like, they're a sect of what's called Anabaptist, which is, they're similar to Amish. They're like less strict Amish. They, you know, they dress a little bit more modern. They're not really in the crazy costumes with the bonnets. Sometimes they wear bonnets, but anyway, these Mennonite families came rolling up, and they all drive these black Chevy passenger vans, all of them. And they come rolling up. It was probably about five or six families, and they park, and they open up these vans, and literally in seconds, there was a crowd of people. Like, it felt, there was, none of these families had less than five kids. It was incredible. Some of them had, it looked like a dozen kids in these vans. So it was like literally in seconds, in the time it took them to open these doors of these vans, there was an entire crowd of people. I felt like we were at an amusement park just from just like five, six vans. So it's like, I guess it's not unnatural to see big families where I'm from. But it is going the other way. And when you go into more urban areas, you will find that people have less kids. But it's not out of the ordinary for most people I know at least have two. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's I definitely think that's a factor, because we don't have those types of Amish or Mennonites or any sex like that in Norway. So you end up with people not really being used to large families and associate that with, I guess, like somewhat of a religious backwardness almost. It's like they're having multiple kids because they're religiously ignorant that, you know, maybe contraception doesn't exist or whatever.
In the worst case, the woman wears a skirt and braids or something.
Yeah, that's terrible. Like, why would you do that?
Oh, my God. So, but going back to kind of, I got a question for you guys here. How do you guys explain, like, I guess, mainstream holidays? Because, as I said in the beginning, I'm first generation. My parents, my father is kind of like, he's like some sort of agnostic. He's like a proto fedora. He's like a fedora before like atheism started. He's like, well, do you think that how come I can't see it kind of people? And then my mom is like halfway. She was raised Roman Catholic, and she likes to say that she's Catholic, but that's about as far as it goes. But still, most of my family does Christmas, does Easter, does these kinds of things. But now that, you know, I'm the one that's holding the holidays, my family is starting to attend heathen holidays. Like, we now do Yule, and we now do Ostara. We now do these things instead of the holidays. But still, the word Christmas, the words Easter, these things still get kind of passed around. There's some, like, leftover cultural traditions as far as food that we just don't want to get rid of. Like, for example, my mom's family always did seven fishes on Christmas Eve. So it's like on Yule, we just kind of have some fishes. Like, we don't have a specific number that we do, probably also because it's a fortune to have a big giant fish dinner like that. But we still have a fish dinner around Yule time. How do you guys explain to your kids what, like, outside society calls Christmas or Easter or stuff like that?
Do you want to say anything about that, Andre?
Well, for me personally, the only thing that we really have had to explain in any way, and that was actually asked questions, but because remember, my oldest one is 3 years old, so there's a limitation to how much I'm needing to explain. But for us, Yule is pretty much a pagan holiday, more or less, anyways. Like, the Christian additives that's been added to Yule in Norway has been very surface level.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, when it comes to food, when it comes to food and so forth, it's still very much like in line. So these traditions we decided to keep. We just removed any sort of like Christian iconography from Christmas trees and just, you know, replaced them with all the like neat stuff like goats and such. And that was pretty much it.
So you just humanize what you already do.
More or less, yeah. Because my family never had much of a Christian holiday when it came to Yule, because it's just very steeped in Christmas tradition, but there was nothing overtly Christian about it. We just removed some of the images and just replaced it with something else and just kept it as is.
I'll tell you what, just because of... also, for in Norwegian, you guys call Christmas Yule, right?
Yeah, we call it Yule, which is the same.
And Ms. Swan, what do you call... What is the German word for Christmas?
Weihnachten. It means the hallowed nights, basically.
So
it's,
you guys,
also not Christian.
But you guys don't even have like a Christian word for Christmas.
No.
That's interesting. Yeah, we say. But I'll tell you, this is something that is strange that has happened in my mind over time. Maybe it's just because of the. I'm so used to just saying Christmas because that's what everybody understands. If I say, we could say, like, we say Yuletide and we say Yule and people still know what you're talking about. But, you know, just for ease of conversation, a lot of times I'll say Christmas. Even if you say Christmas to me, when I think Christmas, I assume heathen Yule. Like, even in my mind, Christmas is not different. It is still a heathen holiday.
No, it is. Literally is, right? I mean, everything that is Christian about Yule or Christmas is a very thin veneer, no matter where you go in the world, because it is absolutely a pre-Christian festival. I mean, the tree, the symbolism of the apples on the tree, you know, the apples of life, those the balls on the tree, you know, you have all those... all those little things like oranges, which symbolize the sun, even, you know, all those things that are part of Yule celebrations. None of them are actually Christian. I mean, aside from your, what do you call that, a nativity scene or whatever?
Yeah.
Like those things, none of it is actually Christian. So it's really, really easy to just strip a couple things from it if you were raised Christian and just keep it as it is otherwise.
Yeah, for us personally, like in my family, we never attended church on Christmas. That was a very personal holiday. And Christmas is a very personal holiday in Norway. It's more of a family thing.
Yeah.
Have the very specific family rituals and such that you usually do at that time. And when it comes to things like food, we never follow the Christian rules because we have just an obscene amount of pork, which is a big no-no in most Christian traditions.
Is that
to have.
For real?
Yeah, pork was also one of our main things. Yeah,
we do pork. Yeah, we do.
But
pork
actually,
and sauerkraut.
Boar. I mean, we would have boar usually.
Yeah, we don't have access to boar.
Yeah, we do. In Pennsylvania, we do pork and sauerkraut. That's like we do it on New Year's, but we also do like a ham on Christmas. Or if you're a WOP, you do lasagna for some reason. I don't know why. My wife's family tried to pass that off on me, and we're not doing that. We're not doing lasagna for Christmas. We're not doing lasagna for, especially not Thanksgiving. That's for real. I go to my wife's family Thanksgiving in New Jersey. They make a fucking lasagna. I'm effing lasagna. I'm sorry.
That's lasagna. Lasagna on Thanksgiving. The pilgrims didn't die for this.
I know. So are you out of your mind? No, we're making mashed potatoes right now. I don't care. This is paused. We're doing time out. We're making mashed potatoes and gravy, or I'm leaving.
Oh man.
Yeah, we're not playing.
Well, I mean, in regards to how my children view those holidays and how I viewed them as a child, I mean, I can say that when I was a kid, my parents, because they didn't want me to be too different, I suppose, they did celebrate on the normal holidays. And also because my parents were working, right? So obviously you don't get time off on whatever day you choose, like the solstice or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they would definitely do the celebration on your, your stat holidays. But I've actually moved it in my practice with my family, and I go by a lunisolar calendar. And so we actually observe the festivals on different days than everybody else. And so I've noticed that even though I do tell my children, because I don't want them to be douchebags, right? So I'm not saying, oh, you know, all those Christians, they're just wrong. But I can tell that that's what they think anyway. So they and the reason for this is very simple, actually. I talked to my eldest about this recently because of Easter. And she's just of the conviction that everybody else has the wrong date, because the Easter Bunny obviously only comes once. And if the Easter Bunny comes to our house on a certain day, everybody else is just hiding eggs on their own. So she's absolutely convinced that the Easter Bunny only comes to our house because we're heathens. So, and I think it's kind of the same thing if you have a Santa Claus figure or whatever. The kids will eventually sort of puzzle it out in their minds that, well, if Santa Claus comes to our house on that day, then either he has multiple days where he goes to other people's houses too, or they're just wrong.
That's hilarious. I love that. That's great. Also, my wife's calling me out in the chat for saying that her family only does lasagna. No, that one year we go and your parents tried to just do lasagna. Your mom was like, I'm not even making mashed potatoes and gravy. It was, don't even try. Don't even try that. Yeah. Fight with my wife in the chat. yeah. Anyway, all right. Just saying I'm lying. I'm not lying. That's true. I was there.
Oh dear, the lasagna event.
You sound traumatized, Dave. Yeah, you want to talk about it?
I was offended. I was offended. Jesus.
It sounded like your wife is offended too now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're gonna get a talking to after this.
Oh right. Dear.
She better not try to like give me lasagna during this talking.
And I'm sure you're getting a lasagna for a while, Dave.
Yeah. So don't get me wrong, I love lasagna. I do like lasagna. It's great. Everybody, who doesn't like lasagna? But it's not for Thanksgiving. You do mashed potatoes and gravy. She's like flipping out in the chat about it. Anyway, no, it's all right. She's all right. She's breaking balls. But so towards the end here, we're kind of running out. Damn, we're running out of time already. Jeez. You guys wanted to talk a little bit about community outreach. And community outreach is an important part of being a heathen community as well. So Ms. Swan, would you want to kind of talk to us about the heathen community going in a direction of community outreach?
Well, I was just kind of throwing around this thought lately because I have been effectively counseling friends for the past year or so, especially after this COVID crisis, and I wouldn't have called it that before, but I just kind of realized that there are quite a few people who come to me for some kind of, you know, just kind of bouncing their problems off me, or even seeking advice or guidance in some way. And I realized that there is nothing like that that is purposely religious or pagan, you know, or heathen for people. Whereas if a Christian has these issues, they might go to, if they're Catholic, they might go to, even to take that to confession, or they might go see their priest, minister, whatever that's called, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's also the problem of people who are in distress in some way. You know, they have some hard times and they may not reach out on their own, but they might need somebody to come to them and sort of check in on them. So I'm not, all of this isn't really formulated in my brain. I'm just kind of like throwing this idea around because I realize that there is a need, simply because I've been sort of filling this need for a few people and helping out with not only a shoulder to cry on or just being a worldly friend in that way, but also sometimes offering some spiritual perspectives on these things. So yeah, I think it's just something relevant that we need to keep in mind for community building, or if you have a kindred or whatever, that this is actually one of those really, really important tools that people are going to need, is like this spiritual counseling, essentially.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. And kind of in my community, I fulfill this role as well. I've relinquished my title as, you know, Gothy, because I feel that people need to be credentialed. We need to have a formalized institution that formally credentials Gothies. I don't think that we should allow people to just become Gothies anymore. However, I do still fulfill this role. And one of the things that you have to deal with is listening to people's problems and hearing people. And yeah, so Eidolon in the chat says, we do need heathen counseling that isn't paused. He's absolutely 100% right. 100% right. We need people that are educated on the theology and the stuff to give definitive answers. You know, you're going to get questions like this is the hard stuff. And because I've been on the internet for so long and I've had the show going, people reach out. And because, you know, unfortunately, we have brothers and sisters that are out there that have zero community, that maybe probably live somewhere that's really, you know, far out or something. They maybe live in a small town in rural North Dakota or something like that, and they have nobody to lean on. So they'll message me and they'll say, hey Dave, I don't know who else to talk to, and they'll ask me questions. And sometimes, or they'll say I need to talk to you about this one thing, and sometimes it's pretty heavy stuff. So not just for me, it's really heavy. Like, Dave, my wife has brain cancer, or hey Dave, I have you know, somebody's dying, or hey Dave, my friend just died and overdosed, and it's not just as a whole, but in my own community as well, I've had to deal with some really heavy stuff. People who had deaths in the family, people that really struggled with addiction. My region got absolutely annihilated by the opioid epidemic. So a lot of overdose deaths that I've had to talk to people about. And when you are in this position, it's not easy to drum up what to say. So what you really need to lean on is that education on the theology. Where is this person? My friend so-and-so, he was my best friend ever. He overdosed and died last night. Where is his soul? Where is he going to go when he dies? Where am I going to go when I die? Just stuff like this, marriage counseling. These are things that need to be addressed in a very real way by people that really know what they're talking about, not just from the lore perspective, but from a perspective of I don't want to say psychology, but from legitimate counseling, not mm-hmm. just, you know, I'm just some self-help guru, self-taught, whatever. I know how to talk to somebody that is grieving. I know how to talk to somebody that is suffering. I know how to talk to somebody that is really struggling and hurting and like really needs something. I've had people reach out to me and say, I'm thinking about killing myself.
Yeah.
You got to know what to say. It's not easy. It's, you know what I mean, I'm just some guy.
Yeah, and these, especially these hard things, they have been what really brought this to the forefront of my consciousness, that there is this need, because I have had people who have struggled with, you know, suicidal thoughts, and people who've, you know, who've been very unhappy with their partners, or had breakups, or deaths, you know, all those things that you just mentioned. There is a need that needs to be, a role that needs to be filled, right? And I mean, you can always help on the personal level if you are good with those sorts of things. But I do think that for a lot of people, they also wish they had more of a spiritual angle presented to them, especially when it's about illness, death, you know, suicide, those sorts of things, where that gives them some kind of solace. And this is where usually religious leaders will step in with answers. People want answers, and they don't want to hear, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. My wife actually just chimed. She says Market Neurona Society is creating a godly school. He is. He's creating, not just him, but all of Neurona Society has created the Kvasir Academy to begin to give formal educations to clergy, to heathen clergy. And it's like one of the biggest steps that we have as a faith taken in long, long, long time. So yeah, it's in the works here. And when I was saying that stuff, I don't mean to come off like, if there are people out there that don't have anybody and they would like to reach out to somebody on this show or reach out to whoever in the community, please do. If you're feeling some kind of way, please do. Like, just because, you know, maybe you feel uncomfortable or whatever, if you are feeling, you know, as Ms. Swan was saying, with the shutdowns and secular society and like all of this kind of stuff that's going on, we feel isolated, we feel sick, we feel tired, we feel depressed. People out there, if you're hurting, reach out to somebody you trust. And I'll tell you what, the folks that are not just the BOG, but from the Neurona Society and the surrounding communities, there are so many wonderful, really brilliant people. If we can't help you out in whatever problem that you have, I guarantee you we know somebody that can help you out. We know a lot of really smart people, a lot of people that have done a lot of really great work helping our folk and serve our folk. So that's always been my take on it. You know, so when people reach out to me, I take it that the moment I picked up this microphone, and I started doing this show, I said, I'm doing this for the folk. This isn't for me. I'm doing this to serve the folk. And it might not be this big, grand upheaval of modern society or whatever, but this is what I have. So if somebody wants to reach out to me or whoever else, we take this stuff very seriously. We are here to serve the folk. So any way that we can help people, we will.
Yeah, and I must say that especially a lot of people who have found their ancestral faith, they do have a very big inclination towards charity, and they wish they knew where to put that, you know, like, you know, try to help other people out. And so it would be good to have more organization around this sort of thing.
Yeah, and Ms. Swan, I think you're definitely onto something. I think you're definitely onto something, that we should have a formalized system or institution or facility or what have you that is dedicated specifically to helping people that are in need. So
yeah, and we can't ignore either that we do live in a very different society nowadays than our ancestors did. You know, when you were just in your village and everybody had the same faith, and there were just natural bonds that were made between people, and everybody always had somebody that would help them out. We just don't have that situation now. So we do need to come up with new solutions for these new problems. We also have a mental health crisis that was not present before. So we just need to tackle different problems now, and we just can't act as if we were just LARPing, you know, Vikings or something.
Yeah, exactly. And Josh said in the chat here, he says, bros are here for you if you're feeling blackpilled. 100%. Listen, if you are somebody listening to this and you're going through something, you're feeling some kind of way, don't ever feel that you have nobody. You know, we care about you. your brothers and sisters in faith care about you. We love you. We don't want you to feel this kind of way. We don't want you to fail. We don't want you to go through this pain. We are here for you. That's why the community is here in the first place. The gods love you. You have value in this world. You have meaning and purpose in this world. Just because the world itself is wicked and corrupt and treats us all badly does not mean that there is no hope. There's always hope. And not only is there hope, we are approaching victory very, very soon. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. We are approaching victory. You know, what we have building here, man, like, I can't tell you the incredible strides and expansion and communities that are blossoming and how many smart people are doing wonderful things all around our community, man. Musicians, artists, people are getting into medicine and all, like, all over the place. Communities are popping up, building things, doing great things, publishing books and magazines and doing, like, it's just all over the place. There's so much inspiration and wonderful stuff going on. Trust me, things are getting better. It's not going to happen overnight. It takes generations to build something like this. But we are, in my opinion, we're ahead of schedule. So don't ever feel like this is a losing battle, and don't ever feel black-pilled. Take them black pills, toss them in the toilet, and flush them. Get rid of them. Get folk-pilled.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we are at over an hour. Jeez. Wonderful, wonderful conversation. Great topics, great points from both Andre and Ms. Swan. In closing, do you folks have anything you'd like to say?
Well, one thing that I wanted to add to all of these topics, basically, that's applicable to all of these things, is that to work on your ego, to work on getting your ego out of these things. This is both for parenting and for counseling or community outreach or anything. It's not about you. And that's really important to remember sometimes, that it's not about how cool we look doing something or how legit we seem to somebody who doesn't matter. Our children are more important, and our community is more important than us as individuals. So that would be my final words.
Beautifully said. Mr. Andre, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Honestly, I think that pretty much summarized my thoughts as well.
Excellent. Very, very good. Good show, guys. Excellent points. People are liking it. Linus says, thanks for the show, Dave. Thank you for tuning in, Mr. Linus. Eidolon says, beautifully said, Dave. Thank you for tuning in, Eidolon. Somebody else here. Michael Dishman said, are there heathens in Virginia? Reach out to us. Yes, there are. There are heathens in Virginia. Reach out to us, and we can get you in contact with some folks, get you into the community. You could find me on Telegram, and I'll get you in the mix. Just type in Dave Martell, and you'll find me. Just look me up. And I'm out there. So I think it's t.me/theboglord. So go look that up, and we'll get you mixed up with a community in your area, if there are one, if there is one. But I'm sure we'll know somebody that's close by. Kat says, how do I connect with folks in, what's MN, Minnesota? Who do we have in Minnesota? We got some folks up there. We got some, at least up in the Great Lakes region. I know a couple guys. But anyway, we got to get going here. But much love, many thanks, and many, many blessings to each and every one of you and your wonderful, beautiful families. I know you guys out there tuning in. I really like this show because it's touched on a lot of pragmatic things for those of us that do have families. And one of the most heathen things that you can do is raise a big, beautiful, healthy family. And get involved with the community and all that kind of stuff. But we're going to shut it down for this evening. If you like us, you support us, make sure to go check out our friend, Iron Age Jodish, at facebook.com/Iron Age Jodish. Our boy Neil John, I'm telling you, this ancient Vedic astrology stuff is off the charts. This stuff is awesome. Really, really cool stuff. Incredible, incredible work. Mr. Neil John, he's a genius. The guy's a genius. You can check out his interview that he did with us. You can just go back in the playlist and you can find it back there, The Bog with Iron Age Jodish. You're going to absolutely love it. So if you want to go check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology and get a reading, make sure to go to facebook.com/Iron Age Jodish and get a reading. And if you decide to get one, tell them Big Dave sent you. Make sure to tell them Big Dave sent you. And if you like the Bog, you support the Bog, make sure to go to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. You can get a sticker and a mug and like all kinds of stuff. And then you get your RSS feed for the audio of every single show that we do to listen to in your car, on your commutes, at work, or at the gym at patreon.com/thebog. Sign up and help us keep the lights on. Help us keep growing. Or you can support us another way by going to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and buy some sweet merch. Summertime is here. I'm so happy the sun finally came out. What a long, miserable winter that was. But the sun has liberated us from their icy chains. And now we get to go out and fire up the grill. So if you're going to be firing up the grill, make sure to get a sweet muscle shirt, get an artisan chef apron, whatever. Man, we have mugs and all kinds of cool stuff for you to be outside with your kinsmen cooking and grilling and having a good time over at shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. If you like the Bog, you can support us there or on Patreon. But this is going to be it for this evening. We're going to raise a horn to our exalted patrons, our beloved patrons that help us support the Bog and keep the machine running, and that is going to be our very own Andre and Mr. Corey. So many hails to both of you, and next week, well, actually this week, we're doing two a week. We're going to be doing the Bog this Friday. I'll see you guys this Friday coming up, 6 p.m. Eastern, every single Monday and Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. Follow me on Telegram and t.me/TheBogLord. I'll see you guys later this week and then again next Monday. Many hails, many blessings, much love. I'll see you guys next time. Hail.